It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 107 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray.
So the last few episodes of our podcast, we've really been focusing on a lot of metagame discussion here based on the regional tournaments we've been going to recently. So this week we want to go back to one of our classic series and kind of close out our discussion of X-Wing secondary weapons.
Yeah, and you listeners might have thought we were already done with our secondary weapon series. We've done torpedoes, we've done missiles, we've done bombs, cannons, turrets. What else is there left? Well, this episode is sort of, and then all of the rest.
Yeah, so today we're going to focus on pretty much every unconventional, non-standard way of dealing damage in X-Wing. And it's going to be a pretty interesting discussion, because there's a lot of variety in this category.
Yeah, and they range from kind of a variety of slots. You know, there's some modifications, a lot of illicit slots dealing damage in unconventional ways. We even pulled in a few pilot abilities because they had some pretty noteworthy ways to deal damage.
Yeah, lots to talk about today, so let's get into it.
All right, so we're talking about unconventional ways to deal damage. So these are cards that are going to enable you to deal damage outside of your primary weapon attack, and that don't fit into a specific secondary weapon category.
Yeah, when we did our discussions on the other weapon types like bombs or torpedoes or missiles or what have you, it was a little easier to classify exactly what we were talking about here, but this really is kind of a catch-all category. So most of these abilities we're going to talk about don't really overlap in a lot of ways. There's just some very general ways that these abilities overlap.
Yeah, I mean, this is very much the random everything else category. There's a lot of one-offs or two-offs of different ways to deal damage. But strangely, they do have in common, vastly, these are direct sources of damage where your opponent doesn't really have a way to evade or spend tokens to get out of it.
Yeah, and I think that's really what makes these compelling sources of damage or compelling game effects. Oftentimes they kind of are expensive or they might take up a really important upgrade slot, but that ability to deal direct damage we've seen is so very potent because it gets around a lot of those core game mechanics like defense dice and defense tokens.
Absolutely, and I think this will start making a bit more sense once we dive into it. So let's start with the beginning of unconventional damage.
Yeah, so the first ability we're going to look at here is one that's been around for quite a while in the game's history. She first showed up in Wave 3 of X-Wing. Coming along with the Lambda-class shuttle, you had a modification card called Anti-Pursuit Lasers. And this is actually a card that has cropped up a couple times throughout the game's history. It's got a reasonably cost-effective ability. Anti-Pursuit Lasers is a two-point upgrade that reads, large ship only. After an enemy ship executes a maneuver that causes it to overlap your ship, roll one attack die. On a hit or crit result, the enemy ship suffers one damage.
Yeah, so here, if an enemy ship runs into you and you have anti-pursuit lasers equipped, you have a 50% chance to do one damage. So this weaponizes your movement because it allows you to block your opponent and deal damage off of that.
Yeah, opening up a more aggressive blocking strategy. Blocking was good up to this point for getting in the way of your opponent to prevent them from shooting at you or to prevent them from taking actions. Here it creates an opportunity for you to actually deal damage by blocking. So even if your ship's not particularly good at dealing damage through its primary weapon value, you have a way to get around those defense dice and possibly deal some damage.
And this upgrade card is large ship only, which does kind of work to its advantage because those large base ships are pretty good at covering a large amount of space, and you could even have multiple ships run into you during a turn. If you park yourself right in front of a full swarm, get a lot of value out of that little anti-pursuit laser.
Though there is a lot of volatility here. Anytime a die roll or random chance is involved, there's a chance that this card might not pay off at all. But there's also, like you say, a high damage potential there, where if you get it to trigger multiple times throughout a game or multiple ships in a round, you can get a lot of good value for that two-point cost. And this card has remained pretty relevant throughout the game's history. It's a fine choice if you're going for a blocking strategy with like a Jumpmaster or a similar mobile large base ship. It does have a lot of other great modifications at this point in the game to compete with things like countermeasures, or guidance chips. So a bit of a decision to be made if you're going to run for this blocking strategy. But this was kind of one of the initial abilities where you could deal damage outside of your normal primary or secondary weapon attacks.
Also in the Lambda was the Darth Vader crew card for the Empire. Darth Vader reads, after you perform an attack against an enemy ship, you may suffer 2 damage to cause that ship to suffer 1 critical damage.
So this ability is interesting. It is dependent on you attacking, but it doesn't really matter how the attack resolves. So whether you hit or you don't, you're still able to trigger Darth Vader if you choose. And this card was actually really relevant. So there was an interesting interaction this card had with the Gunner crew card. Gunner, of course, allows you to perform an attack after you miss with an attack. And since Darth Vader can be used whether you hit or not, you can get a lot of force damage through by attacking, missing, triggering Darth Vader. You suffer 2, they take 1 critical. Then Gunner triggers, you attack again. You can trigger Darth Vader again whether you hit or not, suffer 2 more damage, and deal 1 critical damage.
Yeah, but you've done 4 damage to yourself at that point, Tim.
Ah, yes, Carson, but the value of a point of damage isn't the same on every ship.
That's true. Usually Darth Vader was run on either a Lambda or Decimator or other equally high hit point Imperial ship, and is really used to deal some direct damage to those low hit point, hard to hit aces. If they didn't have any shields or your attack stripped their shields, then the Darth Vader trigger dealing out that critical damage very frequently worth the 2 damage trade-off.
Yeah, there was nothing scarier than a 3 hull point Soonterfell having to face off against a Decimator with Darth Vader and Gunner.
Yeah, I've one-shotted a few Soonterfells with that. I mean, there's just not much it can do. Just force the damage through. And if you get a direct hit with Darth Vader, well, then that's an even trade.
And I've seen Darth Vader's even outside of that Gunner interaction. I've seen Darth Vader's on TIE Bombers before as a really cheap platform to get some guaranteed damage. He exists in a lot of ways as a counter to those really low hit point, high agility ships, where even if they're normally able to evade most attacks, they're not going to be able to evade that guaranteed damage. He was kind of bombs before bombs became good.
Yeah, Darth Vader has always existed as an important meta safety valve. Whenever aces become too strong, Darth Vader becomes a popular option to counter that.
So even though Darth Vader was actually really popular and has maintained a level of popularity, there was another card in Wave 3 that could deal some extra damage that is far less popular now.
And I think always. Saboteur is a 2-point crew card that reads, action, choose 1 enemy ship at range 1 and roll 1 attack die. On a hit or crit result, choose 1 random face-down damage card assigned to that ship, flip it face-up, and resolve it.
So while this card has the ability to deal some extra damage or trigger an interesting crit multiple times, I guess what I think is probably most unappealing about this card is it takes up a really valuable slot, your crew slot. It requires an action to use, it has a really limited range of range 1, and it also requires a random die roll for it to even affect another ship.
Well, Tim, you're also, I think, missing the most important part of why it's not that great is your opponent has to already have a damage card on him before this card can even start to pay itself off, which if you compare it to Darth Vader, at the point where they already have 1 damage card, a Darth Vader trigger might just finish them off.
And nowadays we have so many better options with regards to giving specific critical damage to ships, things like Kylo Ren. So this has never really been a good choice, and it's definitely not a good choice now. Steer clear, list builders.
But yeah, Wave 3 really did open the floodgates. I mean, there's no unconventional damage in Wave 1 to 2, and then suddenly Wave 3, we have 3 new sources. And then we don't get any more until Wave 5 with the Decimator.
Yeah, in this wave, we get a pilot ability source of unconventional damage, as well as a new elite pilot talent source of unconventional damage. On the pilot end, we have the pilot skill 4 Decimator, Captain Oiken, who has the pilot ability. After executing a maneuver, each enemy ship you are touching suffers 1 damage. This one's actually a pretty straightforward method of dealing direct damage here. The Decimator has a pretty fast-moving dial. It's a large base, so inherently those maneuvers get it a little bit further. And since it covers such a wide area, there's a good chance that you're going to be able to make your Captain Oiken overlap an enemy ship.
Yeah, so this is the opposite side of anti-pursuit lasers. Now, when your ship runs into an opponent, they take a damage. And you know what? It pairs great with anti-pursuit lasers to just cover both ends of the spectrum.
And I've seen some effective Captain Oikuns in the past. They were pretty intimidating to ace ships as well, especially since I guess this is a platform that can also carry that Darth Vader gunner combo. I think it does miss out a little bit because if you just pay 4 points more, you get that Rear Admiral Chirinau pilot on the Decimator, which is proven to be one of the long-term great ships and pilots in X-Wing.
But for the player who doesn't like high pilot skill, Oikun does have a lot of options. You don't really have to work too hard to get that ability. You're not really paying extra points for it. And when it does trigger, it is rather powerful.
Yeah, one of the big benefits Captain Oikun has is that pilot skill 4 drops below most ace X-Wing ships. So generally, you're going to be moving first, which means it's a little easier for you to predict where your maneuver is going to land and whether or not that's going to make contact with those enemy ships. And it paired pretty well with that Dauntless title on the Decimator, where after you overlap, you can take a stress to perform an action and then maybe set up a pretty nasty return shot once their ship actually activates and moves past you.
Absolutely. It's pretty ruthless, I would say.
Ah, yes, and that leads us to our next card, Ruthlessness, which is an elite pilot talent card, Imperial only. It costs 3 points, and it reads, after you perform an attack that hits, you must choose one other ship at range one of the defender, other than yourself. That ship suffers 1 damage. I'll admit, when this card first was coming out, I was pretty excited about it, and I honestly expected it to be a lot more popular than it was.
So Ruthlessness is a great effect. I mean, adding extra damage to another ship after you attack, it's pretty good, but you need that attack to hit, and when you're paying 3 points for an elite pilot talent, that does cut into those elite pilot talents that really help your attacks actually hit. Cards like Predator or Push the Limit to give you the action efficiency to get consistent hits on offense.
Yeah, at 3 points, it's on the more expensive end of elite pilot talents, and there were already some pretty reliable elite pilot talents at that point in the game. And I think also the criteria that it's an ability you must use that could potentially hit a friendly ship meant it didn't pair well if your other ships are going to be flying pretty close to your enemies.
But perhaps with all those low hit point ships running around in the meta right now, it might be worth an extra look at.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, this is one of those cards that I think we could see a rise in use if the circumstances were right. Being able to force that damage through is really good. The average ship count per squad has been pretty low, which makes cards like this maybe a little less effective if there's only one other ship it could affect. But, you know, often those Ghost Fen builds are flying pretty close together, so maybe you could force some damage through, guarantee a hit basically against the Ghost, and then force some damage onto that Fen.
Yeah, and any other Rebel lists using either Lowrik or the Sheath of Peds, I think you can get a lot of value off Ruthlessness, hitting those low agility ships and then splashing the damage over to the higher agility ships. Could be pretty effective. So up until now, these unconventional damage-dealing sources have been pretty Imperial-focused. But all that is about to change on the release of Wave 6, where we get the illicit slot.
Yes, Wave 6 of X-Wing, of course, famously introduced a third faction to the game, Scum and Villainy. And with that third faction, we saw a brand new upgrade slot, the illicit slot, come out. And with this illicit slot, we actually got a pretty decent array of abilities that trigger damage outside of your conventional primary or secondary weapon attacks.
So I think we should start out with the card that I think best encompasses this idea of unconventional damage, and that is the illicit feedback array. This is a 2-point illicit that came with the IG-2000 expansion, and it reads, during the combat phase, instead of performing any attacks, you may receive one ion token and suffer 1 damage to choose one enemy ship at range 1. That ship suffers 1 damage.
So this is a really interesting ability and one of the more pure direct damage effects that I've seen. You suffer a damage and take that ion to deal a damage. So the cost is weighted a little bit against you, the person using it. But again, the effectiveness really depends on the value of those hit points. So I remember at the time that this card was released, we were seeing a lot of TIE Phantoms out there. A very popular list was to run 2 TIE Phantoms and a TIE Fighter, and those lists could be very hard to hit. The generally high pilot skill we saw in those TIE Phantoms in combination with the advanced cloaking device where they could cloak and add those extra defense dice right after they attacked often made them very difficult to hit. Here you had an opportunity to ignore those high defense rolls and just deal some straight damage here.
Yeah, I mean, you do still have to get your ship at range 1 of one of those Phantoms, which is not a trivial ask. And you then do also have to give up your attack, though that attack probably wasn't hitting. But where feedback really paid off is if you're able to, like, block one of those ships. So you're not attacking it anyways because you're in contact with them. But you can still feedback array those ships.
Yeah, a popular choice with this upgrade card when it first came out was to run it on some of the low pilot skill scum Z95 headhunters. And I think a lot of people called them bug zappers. And you could put several of these in your list. They were very cheap. The pilot skill 1 binary pirate came in at 12 points plus the extra 2 from feedback array. So you could actually run up to just 7 Z95s in a list with this upgrade card. I remember one time in particular, I was playing against a TIE Phantom. I had 4 of these Z95s with that feedback array on there. I got into range 1 of that TIE Phantom with all of my Z95s, and I took it down in a single turn, just giving myself ion tokens and damage to deal the 4 damage to kill that ship.
Worth it.
Obviously, that's not feedback array's only application there. This has actually been a pretty reasonable choice on great platforms like the Jumpmaster 5000, where it can work on a blocking ship where you're intentionally denying your opponent shots and actions by throwing your ship in front of them and then still dealing damage to them using that feedback array.
Yeah, even works great if you're using cards like the Gonk Crew to get shields back, so you kind of have a perpetual feedback array supply. But yeah, feedback array is a pretty cool card. Deals direct damage at a pretty steep cost, a damage, an ion token, and uses up your attack for that turn.
And I think it was the most interesting and effective of these direct damage dealers from Wave 6. There were several others in this wave, though. We saw another illicit card called Dead Man Switch.
Oh yeah, and this is a fun one. Dead Man Switch is another 2-point illicit that reads, when you are destroyed, each ship at range 1 suffers 1 damage.
And this is a really fun thematic card. It's not the most competitive card. I would say generally abilities that trigger on your ships being destroyed are not really what you're going for in a tournament list. You generally are hoping that your ships aren't going to be destroyed so that you can hold on to that MOV. And just dealing 1 damage isn't necessarily enough unless you're fortunate enough to hit, you know, 3 or 4 ships with that single effect.
Now, I will counter to that and say Cicatro Visago, giving you the ability to switch to a dead man switch when you're pretty low on hit points, that is a nice trick to have in your toolkit. Whenever I'm utilizing Cicatro, I always make sure I bring a copy of Dead Man Switch with me, because that is quite the trick.
Another illicit we saw that deals direct damage here, this one actually takes the form of more of a pure secondary weapon, even though it fits in that illicit slot. The Hotshot Blaster is a 3-point upgrade. It's got the similar secondary weapon layout like we'd see with a torpedo or missile or cannon. It gives you 3 attack dice and has a range of 1 to 2, and it lets you discard that card to attack 1 ship, even a ship outside your firing arc.
Yeah, and I mean, we could even maybe put this in the turret upgrade slot section. But it is only a one-time use only. It is an illicit card. Yeah, it's just, oh no, they dodged my arc. Well, I guess I get to have a turret this turn.
And I always like the theming on this card. I think this is a really fun design. It's not particularly cost-effective. 3 points is a lot to pay for a single 3 attack dice attack with no extra benefit other than shooting outside of your firing arc. But it's a really cool ability, and I can say it did catch me off guard a couple times seeing this crop up way back in those Wave 6 and 7 games.
We also had a named pilot flying the best chassis in the game, the Hawk 290. Dace Bonearm coming at pilot skill 7 with an ability that reads, when an enemy ship at range 1 to 3 receives at least 1 ion token, if you are not stressed, you may receive 1 stress token to cause that ship to suffer 1 damage. So ion tokens are a great control effect, you know, taking away your opponent's maneuver, but they're generally balanced in the effect that they don't deal any damage or deal a very minimal amount of damage for the price you're paying for it. But when you use Dace Bonearm, now you get to turn those ion tokens into damage.
Yeah, I think what really held this ability back is it's not particularly easy to get ion tokens on enemy ships. At this point in the game's history, a lot of high agility ships were very popular, and we hadn't yet seen the release of cards like ion bombs, which could get ion effects out there without the necessity of hitting with an attack from an ion cannon or ion cannon turret. And Dace is a little on the expensive end for a Hawk chassis. As much as you love the Hawk chassis, Carson, I think 23 points for only 5 hit points there is maybe not your best value.
I mean, he's probably coming in at 28 at the cheapest with an ion cannon. And I agree. The main reason you're not seeing Dace, even though he's got a great pilot ability, is that 3-point jump from Polyb to Dace is pretty significant.
And I think the value of that extra damage depends a lot on what ship you're flying against. Being able to deal one extra damage against something like a Decimator or a Lambda class isn't that valuable. So it really depends on the target of your attack and how much one damage is going to swing the game for you. And on top of all that, having to take a stress token effectively limits this card to once per round. And I don't know if that's worth the investment there. You might as well just go Polyp at that point. He's got a tried and true ability.
Right, but at this point, after wave six now, even though the Imperials had a strong early presence in unconventional damage, now Scum is in the lead. They got a bunch of these cards in their introduction, and it continues to be one of the themes of the Scum faction.
After wave six, we did see a little bit more direct damage tech for the Imperials with the release of the Raider. An interesting pilot ability actually here coming in the form of Lieutenant Kolzet.
Yeah, Lieutenant Kolzet's going to work a lot like Saboteur.
Albeit a little bit more reliable.
It reads, at the start of the end phase, you may spend a target lock you have on an enemy ship to flip one random face-down damage card. Assign to it, face up.
And while it's not at the top of the metagame, we've seen some reasonably effective lists that focus around that ability with Lieutenant Kolzet. The ability for TIE Advances to take the TIE X1 title, granting them that system slot, means they can get fire control system, so it's relatively easy to maintain target lock so long as you're getting shots. And being able to flip up a damage, especially if you know what that damage card is, can be pretty devastating if you're dropping something like a Blinded Pilot.
And it's a good thing the Empire has such wholesome cards that let them find these Blinded Pilots for Lieutenant Kolzet to flip up.
Yeah, if you get trapped between Kylo Ren's ability and Lieutenant Kolzet's ability, that could be pretty devastating for you. So it was a few more waves before we saw any additional direct damage tech. Coming with the release of Wave 9, we saw the Shadowcaster come out with a couple upgrade cards that could deal some direct damage.
Yeah, perhaps one of the more unconventional ones is Rigged Cargo Chute, which is a 1 point illicit for just large ships. And it reads, action, discard this card to drop one cargo token. And that cargo token is a debris field that's pretty large. And if you're able to drop this on an opponent ship or put it in their way, then you're dealing them a stress token. And with the debris field, they have a die roll. And on a critical result, they're taking a critical damage.
So not terribly likely that this is going to deal some direct damage, but it is a pretty effective tool. And there's a good chance if you drop it in front of them, you might give them two shots because they'll roll for the critical damage when it drops on them, and then they'll also have to roll if they move over it again. So you got 2 1-in-8 opportunities there to drop a critical damage. Interesting mechanic to be sure. I think maybe the more interesting direct damage mechanic that we saw coming out of the Shadowcaster was the Black Market Slicer Tools Illicit.
Right, and actually, these set up greatly. So while the Rigged Cargo Chute is perhaps better at just putting stress tokens on your opponent's ship than it is dealing damage, that Black Market Slicer tool really likes your opponent's ships to have a bunch of stress tokens on them.
Yeah, and we haven't seen a lot of Black Market Slicer tools recently, but I think this is, again, another one of those cards that, given the right environment in the metagame, could see a resurgence. For a number of reasons. Black Market Slicer Tools is a 1 point illicit that reads, action header, choose a stressed enemy ship at range 1-2 and roll 1 attack die. On a hit or crit result, remove 1 stress token and deal it 1 face down damage.
Stress control has, through the course of the game, been a powerful effect. Really, you know, takes away your opponent's actions, inhibits their movements, and now with Black Market Slicer Tools, you can start to have it deal damage.
Well, and I think the biggest thing going against Black Market Slicer Tools is that it does require a random die roll, but it does have a lot going for it. It's very inexpensive at just 1 point. It goes in the illicit slot, which isn't necessarily a slot you're going to use every time. It is an action, which is interesting because it means you're still going to be able to use your normal weapon attack. So you can use this to try and deal damage and then still have an opportunity to fire during the combat phase. And it's just a really good answer to ships that routinely have stress tokens. So when this was most prevalent, a lot of times it was being used to counter things like an Inquisitor with Push the Limit, which is a ship that is frequently going to have stress tokens because it's relying on that Push the Limit to get its action efficiency and defense tokens.
Absolutely. And one of the big boons for the Black Market Slicer Tools is that that damage goes directly to hull and does not care about shields. So ships like the Inquisitor that only have 2 hull points have to be pretty scared of the Black Market Slicer Tools. Just 2 triggers from that, and they're done. And that does also kind of speak to why it's perhaps not as popular right now, is a lot of the ships have 5+ hull points. So it's a little harder to finish opponents off with Black Market Slicer tools. But if the Inquisitor keeps being as popular as it is, maybe it is worth the 1 point to throw him in there. Sure would help my matchup against him.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very cheap counter to a pretty potent ability. So it's always going to be in that toolbox there for players who are worried about ships like the Inquisitor or Cornhorn. Also in Wave 9, we saw the release of the Arc 170, and along with that, the upgrade card, Seismic Torpedoes. I had to argue a bit with Carson in order to get this one included.
It says it's a torpedo, Tim.
But it functions very differently than other torpedoes, so I think it qualifies. Seismic Torpedo is a 2-point torpedo upgrade, in quotes, that reads, Action header, discard this card to choose an obstacle at range 1 to 2 and inside your primary firing arc. Each ship at range 1 of that obstacle rolls one attack die and suffers a damage or critical damage rolled. Then remove the obstacle. So thematically, this card's got a fun ability where you can remove obstacle tokens from the field, and it also has a 50% chance of dealing a damage or critical damage to a ship at range 1 of that obstacle.
Yeah, pretty devastating against a swarm trying to turn around an asteroid. And this card can really just kind of keep your opponents honest and force them to make some pretty suboptimal moves to avoid that extra damage.
And I'll be the first to admit it's not the most reliable card, and it's maybe a little bit expensive for what it does. That window there between 1 and 2 points would be rough, and 2 points I think is maybe on the high end for how effective this ability is. But I also am never going to discount it. I lost in a top 16 match at a regional once to an opponent flying with this upgrade card in their list. So it'll always haunt me.
Yeah, so that does it for Wave 9. We still see some scum focus dealing unconventional damage through the illicit slot, and a bit more generic ways to deal unconventional damage. So let's snap ahead to Wave 10.
Yeah, when we see the release of the Heroes of the Resistance expansion, we saw the introduction of one of the most interesting pseudo-secondary weapon indirect damage cards that is out there, the card Snapshot.
The Elite Pilot talent slot has now been weaponized. We see a lot of ways to modify attack dice in the Elite Pilot talent slot. Now we just get a way to perform an extra attack. So Snapshot is a 2-point Elite Pilot talent that is a 2 attack dice attack that only can be formed at range 1 and reads, after an enemy ship executes a maneuver, you may perform this attack against that ship. Attack 1 ship. You cannot modify your attack dice and cannot attack again this phase.
So this card has some pretty steep costs and criteria. It does use up your very valuable Elite Pilot talent slot. It does only work if a ship maneuvers into range 1 inside your firing arc. And your ship can't modify this attack with any of your tokens or target locks.
But the payoff is pretty awesome. I mean, if you're able to line this up, getting that extra attack during the activation phase before they're getting those defensive tokens. I mean, even if you're not modifying your attack dice, the defender doesn't really have any access to defensive modifications either.
Well, and even though you can't modify your attack with your conventional tokens, you can actually have some ways to make this attack more effective. If your ship has abilities that allow you to augment your dice outside of your ship's native abilities, you can change it. So, for instance, you have the M9 G8 Astromech, which allows you to target lock friendly ships and lets you reroll an attack die of the ship you have target locked. So that's an opportunity there to get some modification.
It also works great on A-Wings who have access to a second Elite Pilot talent slot, allowing them to use cards like Juke or Crackshot to eliminate any evade results your opponents roll.
Yeah, since Crackshot and Juke aren't actually affecting your dice, those abilities are okay to use with Snapshot. It also pairs really well with the R3A2 Astromech, as we've seen on a lot of Sheathipede Ezra builds, where when you perform the Snapshot attack, even if you're not necessarily dealing damage, you can trigger that R3A2 to take a stress and give a stress to the target you're shooting at. That way, when you follow up with your normal attack during the combat phase, you can deal an additional stress token using that R3A2 trigger.
Yeah, so Snapshot can be utilized on a lot of different ships, and honestly functions in a similar way that we seem to anti-pursuit lasers or Captain Oiken, where you're weaponizing your maneuvering. In this case, it's your anticipation of your opponent's maneuver. Can you put your ship in the right spot so that they land right in range 1, and then you get that sweet Snapshot trigger?
And thanks to its interactions with other abilities allowing you to either modify the attack and make it more effective or use triggers like R3A2, I think this is another one of those cards that we're going to see continue to be a relevant factor in the metagame.
This last one's kind of funny because we have it listed as an unconventional way to deal damage, but I've never actually seen this pilot ability deal any damage, though it does have the potential, I guess.
We're talking about the Kimagila pilot, Tarani Kulda. Tarani's pilot ability reads, After you perform an attack, each ship inside your bullseye firing arc at range 1 to 3 must choose to suffer 1 damage or remove all of its focus and evade tokens.
Yeah, in practice, I think you're always going to just remove the evade token instead of taking the damage. But honestly, I think ships, you know, similar when you're flying things like Paul of Gedali that can take tokens, your opponents just take target locks or spend their tokens on offense beforehand because they're going to throw those tokens away before they take that damage. Most times.
Yeah, since you have the option to discard those tokens, even if you have zero of those tokens, it's pretty hard to get your opponent to suffer damage from this ability. In addition to how hard it is to keep an opponent inside that bullseye firing arc.
Regardless, though, Tarani's still a pretty fine pilot. And, you know, that ability to remove those defensive tokens from your opponent's good. Not a bad ability, it just doesn't usually deal damage.
And with that, we are caught up to all the current X-Wing releases. We're still waiting on Wave 14 here, which was recently announced, so maybe we'll see some new direct damage cards coming out in either the TIE Reaper expansion or Saw's Renegades.
Oh, there's no Scum expansions there, so it's less likely.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/RadioTCX and like our Facebook page. And while you're there, please leave us a 5-star review on Facebook and a little comment saying what you like about the show. We really love seeing those reviews pop up on there. And a big thank you to everyone who's left us a 5-star on Facebook.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy listening to the show, please go onto iTunes and leave us a 5-star review along with a comment and review saying what you like about the podcast. This is a really great way for people to see that people are interested in this podcast and prospective X-Wing players want to know what they should be listening to.
This week, we're going to give a shout out to Morbdetro, who left a 5-star review saying that they love how concise the podcast is and that the weekly format is perfect for getting a constant stream of X-Wing news. Thank you, Morbdetro.
And a huge thank you to everyone else who's left us a review on iTunes. We really do appreciate those.
If you want to support the show directly, please consider going on to patreon.com/radiotcx and becoming a supporter of the show today. It really means a lot to us.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.